from KQED.
From KQED Silicon Valley in San Jose, I'm Dave Iverson. Susan Wojcicki used to be best known for her garage, the one she famously rented out to two aspiring computer scientists named Larry Page and Sergey Brin. The result, of course, was Google. But today, Susan Wojcicki is known for more than just having good taste in tenants. She's a senior vice president at Google, responsible for the company's advertising business, which last year netted the company over $40 billion. She joins us in the hour ahead to talk about her life at Google, what it's like to be a top female executive in Silicon Valley, and the future of online advertising. Susan Wojcicki, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Silicon Valley in San Jose, I'm Dave Iverson. Nearly every story you ever read about Google executive Susan Wojcicki begins with the garage story. In fact, I just used it a few minutes ago for the promo for this program. But the garage story is like a good ad. It catches your interest. And if anyone knows anything about the world of advertising, it's Susan Wojcicki. Yes, she famously rented her garage and a few rooms to future Google founders Sergey Brin and Larry Page 25 years ago. But today, Wojcicki oversees the advertising operation that generates just about all of Google's revenue, $43.7 billion last year. She is the senior vice president at Google. Forbes named her as one of the 10 most influential women in technology. And she joins us this hour to talk about the future of online advertising, life as a woman executive in Silicon Valley, and maybe even the future of garage rentals. Susan Wojcicki, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I want to ask you first about that time, some 25 years ago, and if you knew from the get-go that this was going to be something worth betting on.
Yeah, so actually it wasn't 25 years ago. It feels like 25 years ago.
Oh, I added a decade, didn't I?
Yes.
Yeah, 15,
yes,
sorry.
Yes, an extra decade there. Well, you know, I knew Sergey before he started Google, and at the time, you know, I knew them as graduate students. And so when they said they wanted extra space and they were going to build a search engine and they were going to compete with these companies that were worth billions of dollars, it was really hard to know what to think, because you have these two young students are very ambitious and they're taking on big industries, but then they're also at the same time saying, how much are you going to charge us for renting your garage? And so, you know, I really didn't know what to think. And at first I rented to them mostly because I wanted the rent. And, but as I started using their product, that's when I realized what the power here really was. And, at the time it was just so much better than anything else that really, really quickly you could see that there was a huge amount of promise. And when you would talk to them about it, they had the vision that they still have today, which is to build this amazing search engine that everyone would use and that would help everyone find information. And so really, you know, they were the same back then. They were telling the same story, but it just hadn't happened yet.
And what drew you, though? What sort of tipped you in the direction of sort of placing your own future in that prospect, as opposed to probably any number of things that would have been safer bets?
So I actually did not work at Google when they were in my garage.
Right.
I worked at Intel. And although it would have been a really, really convenient commute, I did work at Intel. And so I had the experience where I started using the search engine. And at the time, it was, you know, no one had really heard of it. But I found that I started using it all the time. And there was this one moment when the search engine actually went down. Now, you have to remember, this was like not Google that we know today. This was like Google running on servers at Stanford and was a beta product, and it went down. And in that moment, I realized I can't get my work done. Nothing else out there is that good. And I realized I'd become completely dependent upon Google and finding information. And it was really that moment where the aha went off, and I thought, this is going to become a really, really important tool. And if you can help people find information everywhere, and the web's going to become increasingly important, Google's going to become more important.
And I'm curious about how you would advise then young college graduates today about how to go about making those sorts of choices, because we live in a time where there's so much anxiety about the future and about, you know, people feel like, well, I ought to go to college to get a particular kind of degree so I have a safe bet in terms of my future and getting the right job. You took a certain kind of risk in making that choice, and I'm interested in how important you see the willingness to roll the dice as being in how people ought to consider their futures.
Yeah. It was definitely a risk for me when I left. I mean, I was leaving a big company, Intel, and I was going to this company that had, you know, less than 20 people at the time and had no revenue. And the people that ran it were younger than me, and I had seen them really as my, you know, my renters, was my perspective on it. I think what I saw in them was I saw that they had, this was going to be an area of tremendous growth. And so when I talk to young people and I give them career advice, I really advise them to choose areas of growth, because anything that's new, anything that's growing that fast is going to be successful.
So it's not so much following dreams as it is placing your bet where there's prospect for growth. I mean, so it's not, there's nothing romantic about this?
Well, there was definitely an emotional connection. So I grew up on a college campus. My dad's a professor. I grew up at Stanford. And so the idea of helping people find information everywhere was a really powerful thought. Like, I connected right away to that idea. But I had worked in technology beforehand. I like technology. I like new things. And so I had already made this decision that I wanted to be in the internet, I wanted to be in technology, and I wanted to be at a fast-growing company. And so those were all prerequisites for me when I was thinking about it. I think it's really important to care. And that's been one thing that I think Google has been really powerful, is that, yeah, I feel like I work there, but I also feel like we have a mission, and the employees of Google, we have a shared mission. And when you read about how this has impacted people's lives all over the world, you feel that you're making progress on that mission.
How would you define that mission today?
So Google's actually had the same mission since the very beginning, which is to organize the world's information to make it universally accessible and useful. And I think it's definitely become broader over time. Information, we get it in lots of different ways. You get it in email. The technology that enables you to get that information has, we've expanded into lots of different areas. YouTube, you know, videos, it's another kind of information. But that was the mission that we had literally the day I started. That was the mission of the company, and I heard it for the first time when I started, and that's still the mission of the company today.
And a mission, like anything else, needs to be supported, which is what you provide for Google in terms of advertising revenue. And that was a bit of a risk too, right? I mean, the idea of sort of going big into advertising when no one had at that point at all figured out how online advertising would work. What convinced you that that was possible?
So when I joined Google, I had no idea how they were going to make money. In fact, when I told people I was joining Google, like, what they would say is, first they would say, like, why does the world need another search engine? And then the second thing they would say is, there's no money in search. Now, today we find that really, really hard to believe, because search has been proven to be so valuable. But at the time, that was what people thought. And we really had, the company really did not have any, so I have the original business plan of the company, and the original business plan has advertising as a way of generating revenue, but it actually says we're going to generate like a third of our revenue from licensing our search to other people, a third of our revenue to providing like customized search, and then a third through advertising.
And it's turned out to be what in terms of percentage?
It's turned out to be that advertising is generating 90+%. It varies quarter to quarter, and if you include Motorola now, but it's more than 90% of Google's revenue. So at least one. So we, you know, when we look back, then we're like, at least one thing worked out. And you know, that's true for most startups. Most startups, when they go into business, they have an idea of how they're going to generate revenue, and sometimes it changes. And so the fact that, well, we had three ideas, one of them worked out, great. But the reality is that's how most media companies generate revenue, is via advertising.
So let's talk some about how the online world has changed the world of advertising in particular. In a nutshell, what would you say is the biggest change in how the ability now to transmit advertising through online products has changed the world of advertising?
Yeah. Well, I see advertising as this amazing challenge because advertisers have to go where the users go, right? I mean, the only reason that advertising is valuable is if you can reach users. And users are changing incredibly fast. They are, you know, think about smartphones. Like, we didn't have them 3 years ago. Think about all the tablet adoption. And so users just move incredibly fast. And so advertisers need to move as fast as users move. And that's hard because advertising is done by companies with budgets and approval processes. But advertising has, and online advertising and search advertising, has had a lot of advantages. It's enabled small businesses everywhere to advertise really, really easily. And that was one of the goals.
Give me an example of how that can work.
Well, so our search advertising enables users to choose specific queries, specific searches that they would like their ad to show up on. And this was a type of advertising that we really pioneered. And we did it because we thought this would be the most relevant and useful experience for users. But it enables any small business, like you're a small business, you have, you know, a consulting business, or, you know, you sell, like there was actually one story I read recently about this small company that started selling kids' plates and lunch boxes. And actually now I've purchased a lot of items from this small site. But one of the founders had been out of work, and so they had created this small e-commerce site, and then they were able to type in, create their ad really easily with Google AdWords and be able to choose keywords. So when you type in something like kids plates or Dora the Explorer plates or lunchbox, what you see is a result that says this is where you can buy kids plates and lunchboxes.
And in turn, if I then click on that, that's where you get your money.
Yeah. So one thing that's really unique is we get paid only when the user chooses to click on it. And so that puts the burden on us to make the advertising really relevant and useful for the users. But we've also made it really easy. So any small company can get up and running really fast with their advertising, and it's efficient because they only pay if we're sending them leads. And so a lot of small businesses, this is how they're generating their leads.
So how are things changing now with online advertising as everything gets more mobile? You talked about use of smartphones. What difference does that make for you? Because you don't get as much, right, for an ad that appears on a mobile device as on a laptop, is that right? And how are you having to be quick and adjust as well?
Yeah, so mobile has just been a huge change for us because users are coming online so fast with mobile, and it's caused us to rethink all of the models that we have. So mobile has the advantage that that it's really powerful, but it also has location. And so we've had to adopt and change our creatives so that for example, if you're searching
I want to go get something to eat.
Yeah.
And I pull out my phone. And so what happens that's different now in terms of what I would get as far as an ad for a place that's right near where we are in downtown San Jose?
Yeah. So ideally you would get the ability to call. So we'd suggest different restaurants for you. You'd be able to call them. We would have maps on how to get to them, how far away it is. Like if you want to go have Chinese, it's 0.1 mile away from here. And ideally we'd also enable those businesses to offer you promotions too, if they were interested. So like, you know, we have all this extra room right now, or we're having this special lunch special. We'd like you to know about it. And if you come in the next hour, you can get it for 50% off.
And how do messages change on that small, tiny screen? I mean, do you have to craft things differently? Are the images that are created, the ads that are created for a mobile device, different than what was on the laptop that's sitting in front of me right now, different than what used to come on advertising through the big television screen?
Well, so we want to make it really easy for advertisers, because a lot of our advertisers are small, like I mentioned beforehand, so we don't want to give extra work for them so that they give us their information once and it shows up on the device regardless of and we figure out where the user's coming from, and we show them the relevant information based on where they are. But ideally, it will include all that information, the phone number, the address, the location, how to get there, the specials, the promotions, and they give it to us once. And then if they're If the user's on a phone and they're near the business and we can show that information, like, oh, it's 0.1 miles away, but if they're on a desktop, maybe we take them to a landing page where they can see the menu and when they have the phone number.
Susan Majewski is our guest this hour. She is the Senior Vice President for Advertising at Google, directing their enterprise, which nets $43.7 billion of revenue each year. So this gets us into the other question that I'm intrigued about with advertising, which is then what do those advertisers and what does Google then know about me? Mm-hmm. So if I, to follow our example here, I go out and say, I like pizza. And so I put that into my mobile device and I get that. So what does that advertiser now know about me because they can now track me? Or what does Google now know about me?
Yeah. Well, so for our search, the advertiser only knows that a user searched on pizza. And they, the advertiser might have said, like, I want people who are in the San Jose location and people who are querying pizza. And so that's what they would know. There's someone who's queried pizza and is in San Jose. Google also serves ads across the internet for lots of publishers. So we also have a display network. And there, we try to have an understanding of what's actually on the page. But we also try to have an understanding of what that user's interested in. So if we know that you're a sports fan, like I know you just had a sports session, that you, or you're interested in basketball, like we should be able to show you tickets that are relevant for that, for the games that are coming up or for jerseys. And so we try to have an understanding of our users on the display network that would of information that would be relevant for them.
And what to you, how do you respond to those who are concerned about the obvious sort of privacy questions mm-hmm. that provokes, that mm-hmm. Google knows more about me than I want them to know?
Mm-hmm. Well, so first of all, we want to make sure users have choice. That's always been number one for us. And so we give users the option to opt out of pretty much all the things that we do.
Do you think people really know that, though? I mean, I'm sure this may well be generational, mm-hmm. but I suspect a lot of people my age, for example, might just sort of merrily search along and not really have a clue about A, what you know, and B, how to opt out of that.
Yeah. Well, we communicate that. So actually, all the ads that we have in the top right-hand corner, it says ad choices. You can click on it. We have that information. We make everything transparent to the users, and we do give them choice. On the other hand, it's in order to serve you relevant ads, because I also hear from users all the time, oh, like, why am I getting this ad that's not useful for me? Like, I'm not interested in going to Hawaii right now. I'm planning on going to New York. So in order to serve relevant advertising, too, we need to know something. And so at the end of the day, it's a trade-off for the users in terms of serving them relevant ads. But we do everything we can to try to give users the information and the controls for them to opt out of anything they want to opt out of.
You may well have seen this piece that was in the New York Times Magazine about online advertising recently by Jeffrey Rosen. But he wrote at one point, from the perspective of Google, I'm not a consumer. I'm a product waiting to be sold to advertisers. What do you think of that observation?
Well, we're very focused on our user product. Google is a consumer company, and it's important for us to do the right thing for users. And I represent the advertising part of our business, and I'll say our advertising part of our business is very, very user focused, because we want to do the right thing long term and in terms of providing those solutions. Advertising is an important part of the ecosystem too. Advertising is what is funding all the content. Advertisements are useful, and we've been moving to a model on search. Well, search already has, the user is choosing those ads. The user is clicking on the ads because they want them, because mm-hmm. they're relevant and targeted for them. And if you look at what we're doing with YouTube, where we're serving video ads, right, which are more display, we've moved to a tree view model, which is where the user is also choosing to see those ads, and the advertiser only pays when the user chooses. And that actually aligns all the incentives. That means the user wants to see it. It's useful for the user because they actually think they want to buy it or go there or use that service. And it makes the advertiser, design ads that the user's just going to want to see.
So would you argue then that really users have much more control over online advertising than in the mass media format of television, where you're getting that ad in the middle of the basketball game, whether you want it or not?
I mean, users definitely have a lot more control online, and ideally the ads can be much more relevant also to the users online. And I mean, when you think about it, if you go into, like, if you think about a circular, when you go into, you know, any store like Target or Walmart, like, you're getting something that was mass produced. And it's for all ages, for all different types of people. It could be that inventory isn't even in the store anymore because they sold out of it this morning. And so when you think about that, as opposed to, like, maybe you should get something that's much more dynamic, that's generated based on the information, the inventory they have in the store today, based on, you know, the location that you're in. Like, we don't sell snow shovels here, for example. So there are a lot of opportunities for those ads to be much more relevant because of the dynamic nature of the internet.
Susan Wojcicki, our guest, Senior Vice President at Google. We welcome your calls and participation in our program as well. You can email us, too, at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. What continues to excite you about being part of Google at this point in its development? Is it as exciting to you as it was in those early garage years after?
I think it's more exciting. And, I mean, it was really exciting when I got started, too. But, I mean, so much of our media is switching over to being digital. And, you know, for me being... I mean, just thinking about Google, like, globally and all the products, the ability to deliver information to people all over the world, to create these amazing experiences that never existed beforehand.
Such as? I mean, what kind of experience excites you in terms of its possibilities?
Well, one of the things, we have a product called Google Now that we've released, where it actually suggests information to you that we think you want, but you haven't yet asked for it. And we have that on the Android phones, and it's really amazing because, you know, I'll look up this information and it will tell me ahead of time. Like, so I have the problem that I'm you know, busy, I have kids, I'm working, so sometimes I'm late, and so, like, I'll look on my phone and it will tell me exactly, like, you need to leave now, because there's traffic. We know the traffic, and it has my calendar, so it has the ability to tell me.
That's a little spooky, isn't it? I mean, to have a device that's saying, Susan Wojcicki, you need to leave now.
Well, this is, first of all, something that users opt into, right? So the users, like, are choosing to do that. But, you know, again, it's like the question of that's useful. And this is all information that's already stored. It's stored on my calendar. And so it's useful for me to be able to look at my phone, and you know, I'm looking at my phone anyway because I'm, like, looking at the time or I'm looking at my calendar, and for it to actually put these things together and to say, oh, there's a lot of traffic right now on the 101, you might want to leave earlier.
What if it's wrong?
Well, it's probably more likely to be right than I am to assess that myself, because I didn't underestimate time. But, I mean, so that's an example of, like, how can we help people find things, you know, more effectively. I mean, and then there are lots of other things where, I mean, the driverless cars, like, my kids are going to be driving in a few years. How can we make transportation safer? You think about Google Glass, you know, how can we make it that you can have access to taking pictures or to get information when you need it in a hands-free type of way? And so, I mean, really, if you look at any type of anything in our lives, and you think, like, how did technology influence us, it's going to be different in the future. And, I tried to explain to my kids, like, I didn't grow up with, like, iPads and iTablets. So the world's going to be very different.
We'll hear more from Susan Wojcicki, and we'll hear from you as well. Please join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. This is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson, broadcasting today from KQED Silicon Valley in San Jose. Joining us, Susan Wojcicki, Senior Vice President at Google. She will, and her family actually as well, will be honored at the Commonwealth Club on Wednesday, April the 10th. We welcome your calls and participation in our conversation as well. What questions do you have about Google advertising and about the future that Google is leading us into? You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can also post your thoughts or questions on our Facebook page or on our website. We were talking before the break about these other exciting new ventures that Google is engaged in, whether that's driverless cars or Google Glass. Tell us something about the structure of Google and the way in which you work as a management team. How engaged are you in those other aspects of the Google enterprise?
Yeah. So I'm officially responsible for our advertising products and not the selling of them, but the building of them. So the engineering, the design. We think about building the future of Google's advertising systems. And Google has, you know, a number of other products that are managed by other key people like YouTube and our Chrome Android, our search products. And then you know, Larry Page, of course, is our CEO.
And do you find that sort of interchange? There's a lot of attention to this question recently about the workplaces, where I'm going with this, and in brought about in part by Marissa Mayer at Yahoo saying that people shouldn't work at home anymore because interaction was key to innovation. That it's not a question of productivity. Clearly, people work hard when they work at home. Mm-hmm. But there's something about that kind of interaction. Is that key to how Google operates?
Well, so we definitely, Google has offices all over the world. But having close contact, we tend to put people, co-locate them. So people who work on the same project should be sitting together. Like you shouldn't have to have a meeting if you're working really closely with someone. You should just sit next to them. And that way you can actually iterate a lot faster because you're all in the same location and you're able to move really fast. On the other hand, I think, you know, we do work with different offices. People do VC in from different offices.
And, VC in?
Yeah. So we have a video conference capability. And because we have people all over the globe that are offices that we're working with and we're a global company. And so we have a pretty amazing system where people can just really, really easily VC video conference in. And it's kind of like magic. It's also, I think, important for people to have flexibility. And I know that, you know, there are times that I need that flexibility. And I think that's also like a really important part of the workplace and part of attracting top talent.
Well, I want to come back to that and the whole question of how you manage work and home life, and another topic that's gotten a lot of attention in recent weeks with Sheryl Sandberg's book about leaning in and the role that women have to both can play but also have to juggle. But let's come back to that after we take a couple of calls first. Nina joins us first in San Ramon. Nina, go ahead.
Hi. First of all, I just wanted to say I think Google does an amazing job of advertising. I actually really love Google advertising because it's a great way to sort of discover new websites that are related to your searches. And it for me, it was always great because I used to find all kinds of new stores and interesting things on through Google advertising. However, in the past 5 or so years, I've been seeing a lot of advertising from Google that's, if you visit, for example, if you go to like Pottery Barn's website or some e-commerce site and you look at a specific product, you're kind of hooked to that one product forever. So now when you go to a different site, you'll see a sidebar advertising with that exact product that you looked at, except you'll see it 50 times in the next 50 websites that you visit. So it's become less of something you can use for discovering new sites and new products, and now it's just sort of trying to hook you to that one thing that you looked at once and you can never get rid of it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So definitely, there is a trend in the advertising industry as a whole, and there are many advertising networks and many, many companies that use those advertising networks to be able to reach their users again. So you go to a specific site, like you go to Pottery Barn, and then Pottery Barn wants to remarket to you other products or the products that you maybe didn't purchase.
So you become haunted by Pottery Barn. I mean, it's there no matter what.
Well, so those advertisers are trying to sell you things that are and make you promoting products that are that they think are going to be relevant for you because of the products that you looked at.
So how does Nina get rid of Pottery Barn?
Well, so first of all, we give the ability for users to opt out of any kind of interest-based advertising. And we have that in like all ads in the top right-hand corner have the ability to go to a page about the advertising and for them to make those choices.
And do you want to do that, Nina, or do you just want some way of being able to still get the useful information you want but kind of edit it in some way?
You know, I am torn because on one hand, the editing option is good because it allows me to sort of get rid of whatever I didn't want to see or no longer want to look at. But, you know, I kind of I don't want to spend a lot of time going through ads and deciding, okay, this is a good ad, this is a bad ad. I kind of liked that, you know, I'd say, I'm just guessing, it was about 5 years ago, but in recent history, it's been that, you know, all the ads I would see would be news sites or something I've never heard of, and it was just very much related to what I had searched for in my previous Google searches.
Yeah.
So I don't want to do a lot of editing.
Yes, Nina, thank you. So is there a way of kind of gradating this so that it's not you're either in or you're out?
Yeah. Well, we do have a ability for a user to say, mute this ad. So this is like an ad that I'm no longer interested in. And as you know, I already purchased it. I'd like to see other things. I mean, definitely this is like a really new space that Nina's talking about here. And I think there are, you know, like online advertising is still overall pretty new, and we really like to be able to give them, make sure that this is really working for the user. So, like, if you shop at Pottery Barn, like, you probably would like to know if they're having, like, a spring special. But if you already purchased an item, like, you probably don't want to see that again. And so I think these are all areas we're working on refining in terms of giving more controls to the user to make sure that they're happy with what they're seeing.
Nina, thanks so much for the call. Let's go next to Preet in Santa Clara. Preet, go ahead, please. You're on the air.
Sure. I want to just know that what are the other areas, other mediums that you're seeing growing? YouTube is obviously serving a lot of video ads. As you think, see things like Pinterest kind of grow up, are those areas of interest to you as well? I'll take my answer off the air.
Sure. I think we see by far, if I were to rank the growth area, mobile would be number one, just because of the users and like the huge amount of growth that we see there and the number of proliferation of devices. Video is huge too. YouTube, just like the number of users that we have, advertisers are really beginning to take that seriously. That is a really important area for us too. You talked about Pinterest. I think that is, that's definitely like an interesting site. And then I think it also shows how fast this area is moving. I mean, Pinterest is a site that didn't exist that long ago. And yet here we are, you know, asking about it. So the technology is constantly changing and it's evolving. But yeah, we'd like to do a lot more in retail and shopping. Google's made changes to how we offer shopping on our products. And we expect to continue to do that.
Daniel emails in, Google recently announced that they would cancel the Google Reader service. How can users put their trust in Google's cloud applications when even a popular service such as Reader might be canceled without explanation?
Yeah. And
explain what Reader is for those who don't know.
Yeah, so Google Reader is a product that is used to be able to read news really quickly and to see a lot of articles quickly and to be able to subscribe to different feeds and to be able to have them all presented in one uniform way. Reader is a product that had a really loyal following, and the following used it a lot, but it was not a growing product. We also saw that there were a lot of substitutes in the marketplace and a lot of other places that people could go. And so, you know, we understand how important the information is that's stored there. When you're storing information with Google, like we all, like all the executives there, all of our lives are also in those products. At the end, I think we're going to look at, it's really important when users are storing their information there that we're able to keep that and make sure users can continue to get their information. But if there are substitute products and it's not growing, then we may look at moving on to other places.
It's interesting to me that Daniel used the word trust. How can users put their trust in Google? It's a different expectation in some ways that people have, I think, for Google. What do you think that's about, and how do you try to maintain that?
Well, I do think it's a... I think that users, I'll just say, I know that, I'll just talk about myself, like all my email, you know, is in my Gmail, all my contacts are there. I have a personal blog for my family. And so people understand that they're using this to run their life. And that's something that we understand. I mean, Google understands that these are really, really important. And that's part of what we're trying to do is build great products that users will use. I think Reader was a little bit, I know there is a very loyal following, but I think it's different than products where users really are putting a lot of their own information into a product, and that's what we see is so important.
But part of what I hear Daniel saying in that note is that how can we trust you when you don't tell us what's going on? Mm-hmm. That there wasn't enough of an explanation. So mm-hmm. do you think that you need to do more in terms of being transparent about explaining how you're going about making those sorts mm-hmm. of business decisions?
Yeah. No, you know, I think we try to be as transparent as possible about the decisions that we're making. The reality is there's just a lot of things happening and there's a lot of change in the industry overall. But I mean, I will say, like, we take the users very, very seriously, and we really think a lot about how they're using the products. Our own employees, give us a lot of feedback about the things and the changes that we're making, and we understand that is really important, and we really value that the users trust us and are using our products.
Let's hear from another Google user, I suspect, Izzy in Sacramento. Izzy, go ahead.
Hi. My question is about Google Shopping and why it was changed to basically only showing the search results for companies that paid for it rather than search results for everywhere. And I'm wondering if this is a trend that we're going to see where basically when you search for something on Google, you're going to more likely than not only see results that were paid for and no results that were not.
Yeah. So earlier this year, actually, well, last year, sorry, we made a change where we moved our shopping experience to being a commercial experience. And the reason we did that was for multiple reasons, which is that basically it all boiled down to the end. We thought this offered a better user experience, and this was better for the users. It was also better for the merchants. And because what we had before was we had product information that we were showing on the page in multiple different locations that was not all synchronized. And it wasn't always, so we would have the paid information in one place, the free information in one place, and sometimes they were from the same merchant. And at the end of the day, what we realized is that the merchants, they want to be able to tell you about what they have in their store that's relevant for you now. So right now, for example, like we're going into spring, if we just crawl the site and we pick up what's on the page, that might be their winter collection, whereas what they really want to promote is their spring collection. And they didn't have any way to be able to say what's really important for us right now is featuring the stuff that's coming into the store. The winter collection is like all being dragged off the floor right now. And so overall, we have seen we think this is going to result in a better experience for the users and for the merchants.
Izzy, thanks for the call. I want to come back, because we just touched on this, I want to cut back to the question of sort of balance between work and family life and how we manage all these things. As we all know, there's been a lot of attention given to this issue recently. Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, and about how you have to manage the balance between ambition and home life. How does that work for you? I mean, you're raising kids, as I understand it. You're also raising chickens. So how do you do that and do what's required of you in this huge job that you have at Google?
Yeah. It's an interesting question, and I think I do it kind of like, you know, most working moms do it. It's and dads, and I'll like really point out, I think this is actually not a women or gender specific issue. I mean, most women are in the workforce, and this is an issue for women and for men. And you know, at the end of the day, I think there is I like Sheryl's book in that it encouraged and it was a very personal account about what it was like for her with a lot of facts and data, and really encouraged young women to be ambitious and to lean in, as she says. But I think at the end of the day, like how I do it is I really haven't thought that much about it, and I just kept going. And I love what I do. And so for me, I've been able to, you know, have kids, have a job,
no compromises either way? Do you feel like you've ever had to compromise either what you wanted to do work-wise or what you wanted to do family-wise?
So I think you wind up compromising all the time. That's the reality of it. But it's worth it, in my view. I mean, I think you do compromise in the sense that, sure, there are going to be, you know, business meetings that I'm not going to go to, or travel that maybe I'm going to decide not to go to. But I don't think those are like things that for me are on the fringe. Like, what matters is, like, I've spent a long time developing expertise in advertising and in Google, and like whether I actually go to those evening meetings or not really doesn't matter. What matters is the decisions being made in the office on the key products are the right ones, and that's what matters. And I think, you know, it's the same thing for, I mean, I try to be home. So like kind of one of the ways I've managed is I try to always be home and not do computers between 6 and 9 p.m. at night. And I feel like having that time.
Phones off.
I put the phones away. It's charging. and I try really hard not to do computer, email, and that's true for my husband, too. Like, it takes both of us there, and that's true for the kids. I mean, unless they have homework, which now they do on computers. But I've found that having you know, some time that's just family time is really, really valuable.
Let's hear next from Richard in San Francisco. Richard, go ahead.
Yeah, very briefly, I use Google search a lot, and I never look at the ads anymore because I find that 99% of the time, even more than that, I'm looking for a specific product, and I get an ad from companies that don't sell the product I'm looking for, so it's a total waste of time. And if I could ask one other quick question, why doesn't on the Android Google Maps have the same information on my cell phone as I can get on the Google on my home computer when I use Google Maps?
Yeah. Well, you know, I would just say to your ads question, like, we're working on it. Our goal is to have great ads that are relevant and useful. And you know, it's like, you know, we carry that burden, like, and that risk, like, users click on it. If we don't show anything relevant or useful, then they don't click, and, you know, we don't generate any revenue. So we're very motivated to make sure you're seeing the right things, the things are relevant to what you're searching on. You know, why the maps isn't the same on Android or on desktop. I think that's a good question. In general, we're trying to synchronize our products and make sure that we're showing the right thing independent of device. But you know, sometimes there might be different information or different, it might be a different code base that we wind up running. But I think, you know, you're hitting on something that's right. Like, in general, we want the experiences to be consistent across devices, unless there's something unique about where you are located with a phone that we can offer, like where you are right now, that's relevant for you on a phone that's not as useful on a desktop.
Richard, thanks. Let's hear next from Kevin in Mill Valley. Kevin?
Yes, I just got a question about opting out on the ads. When I do opt out, or if I do determine that I want to opt out, are you still keeping a track of me on when I do search? And so in the future or whatnot, that you can come back and also place those ads back on there for me? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think if you are... So we have a search system and we have a display system, and they function differently. But if you opt out of the display one, then we are removing the information, or we are not keeping track of any of the interests. If you opt out of it. Then yes, we would not have be collecting information on what we think those interests are that would be relevant or useful to you.
Once Kevin opts out, Google no longer knows anything about Kevin?
Well, I don't want to. It's actually very. There's a lot of detail here, if he opts out, we wouldn't know these are the specific areas of interest of his. Like, we wouldn't know, like, you know, he's interested in travel or pets or whatever. But, you know, for fraud or for other reasons, like, we would just have an anonymous way of making sure that we don't have, you know, we would need it for different systems that we have in terms of fraud or frequency capping or other, like, more generic ways to just make the internet work.
Here's a question from Faye, who asks, how would a small business selling cupcakes wind up appearing on the first page of Google search results, and what would that cost?
So that's a great question. She can find out really easily by going to AdWords and typing in cupcakes as a sample. And we give in the interface a range of what it would cost to appear on that first page and how many leads she could actually
so
get.
So what might it cost if I'm wanting to get into the cupcake business, what would that potentially cost?
So I don't know, but I'm going to guess, like right now, and this is a total guess, maybe like 50. I mean, it depends how many other bidders there are. So if no one else is advertising on cupcakes, then it's going to be like 5 cents per click. If someone is, you know, if it's a very competitive category that like everybody in the cupcake business is advertising on AdWords, you know, then it might be a couple dollars per click. But again, you're only paying per a user who has searched on the word cupcake and is going to your site and has chosen to come and visit your site.
Will newspapers ever figure out how to do online advertising and make money? I mean, if I don't know if you've ever gotten a call from the Mercury or News or the Chronicle saying, help us, but will that ever happen?
I mean, newspapers are moving to digital. They're becoming very sophisticated in their online advertising. And I think that they definitely will figure it out. They will. We're going to figure it out together. You know, we supply some of the technology that they use, and more dollars are going to move to digital. And so I think we're at this transition point where the users have moved, but not all of the dollars have moved. And so the newspapers, in particular, or all the traditional media, are in the middle of that transition where their users are transitioning to digital, but their advertisers haven't transitioned as fast.
Do you think then that can be a sort of, I know you have an interest in journalism and grew up in a family with sort of legendary journalistic interests, of your mom in particular. So can this be a savior in the end for journalism?
I mean, I think online advertising has to be. I mean, it's going to be what enables content across the internet to be able to generate more revenue. And you know, you look at tablets, and tablets you can offer really amazing interactive types of experiences. And so I think that we're really at the beginning, and that's part of what makes me so excited about this opportunity. Mm. And my job is that there are a lot of businesses counting on making sure that we figure this out and that we get the dollars to move and that they're useful. I mean, so we've gotten great feedback from people on the call. We really need to make it work for the users, but also for the newspapers and the content owners.
Christiana is next in Menlo Park. Christiana, go ahead.
Hi. My question was, what is Google's X team currently working on? And then my follow-up question will be, why is Google so secretive about the X team?
Okay.
So we do have Google X. I think that's what you're referring to. So Google X is our project around different hardware projects. And so some of the things that I mentioned, like Google Glass and our driverless cars, those are things that have come out of Google X. And I don't think it's meant to be secretive as it's like just early. And so, you know, when we're developing something and it's early and we're not really sure what's going to happen or how it's going to come out, we don't talk about it because it's changing, it's not defined. But I think we've announced stuff pretty early. I mean, Google Glass, we announced pretty early. It's just coming out right now for people who have signed up the developer version. It's where a lot of really exciting technology is happening.
There are lots of email and other postings coming in, all with very specific recommendations for you, and it shows how tied in people are to these. This person writes in, for example, that when I search for kitchen appliances, I see sponsored ads from Sears and Home Depot, but when I click on them, I go to the home page rather than the appliance for which I'm searching. Mm-hmm. So people have very sort of particular needs that they want you to serve.
Yeah. So I'm aware of that issue. And our product ads, we actually have been working that the kind of commercial shopping experience that we talked about beforehand, really, if you type in a specific oven or a specific product, like we should be able to take you to the actual product page. And that's one of the things that we are working on doing right now. And we do have that available now on our site.
And a couple of concerns about sort of the dark side of this question. One person writes in, Allison, saying that she loves Google but finds it disturbing that the company, quote, knows everything about us. And similarly, Tom writes, Jeffrey Rosen is right. We are the product that Google packages up with a bow to advertisers? How do you respond to those? You have intense interest for people who want you to get the appliance ad right and not be burdened by too many Pottery Barn ads, but you also have people who are worried about how much Google knows about them.
Yeah. I mean, I think I think the challenge here at the end of the day is people want to have useful products and they want the products to work for them and they want to find the information and you know, we live digital lives, but they also want to have choice and transparency. And so really what we've tried to do at the end is give them the great products, but then also give them the ability to understand what we have. We have a lot of tools where users can see that information. They can export their products at any point if they decide they want to leave and do something, you know, go to a different provider. And so, like, really our approach has been develop great products but also give users choice so that if they choose to go somewhere else, they have that option. And we're a consumer company, and so that means that we're going to design and try to do the right thing always for the user. And that's been a mantra at the company since day one.
Just have a moment left, but can you imagine what the future will be? I mean, it's everything explodes and changes so fast. Can you even imagine where you will be 10 years from now?
It's so hard. It's so hard to imagine. And, you know, sometimes I hear these ideas and they're just an idea, and then a few years from now, they actually happen. And that's the magic of the time that we live in right now.
Susan Wojcicki, Senior Vice President at Google, thanks so much for being part of our program today.
Thank you for having me.
Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineers today are Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. Amanda Supai, our engagement producer. And Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson. Thanks for joining us here in the Silicon Valley studio of KQED in San Jose. Join us again Monday morning for Forum.
This program was produced as a part of Makers, an initiative of PBS and AOL. Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.